Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, June 1st, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy, wet, soggy, freezing June 1st Monday, everybody. It is cold here. It's 47 degrees and soggy and wet here in upstate New York. We had at least 24 hours of rain. I believe it was a remnant of one of those Texas storms that continued on up. I know most of us in the upper northeast got a good dose. And the storms weren't like they had in Texas, that's for sure. But we did get a good dosing of rain, and the temperature plummeted. I literally had to turn the heat on yesterday because it was so damp and cold. And I don't know if I've had to do that in almost June in the recent past. So let's hope this is not a sign of things to come. You know that we had probably one of the most bitter winters on record here this past season. And this summer is, I don't know, it's actually had a few false starts already. And then we already had frost warnings multiple times over the last month. And so no one's really been able to plant. And now it's back cold again. So it's supposed to be chilly all this week until this weekend and then go back up to normal temperatures. So color me freaky. But I could tell you it definitely wreaks havoc on my motivation, my physical ability to, like, go all balls out and get shit done. I could tell you that because all I wanted to do yesterday was climb under a blankie and snuggle. That's about all we did. Actually, we watched Jurassic Park 1 and 2 yesterday. They had a little marathon on, and my daughter had never seen Jurassic Park, so that was quite fun for a rainy, crappy, cold Saturday that's supposed to be a nice, warm, sunny Saturday where I was supposed to be pruning and cleaning the yard. So whatever. Good thing, though. It was a good procrastination. So where are we going to go back to today? Well, what I really want to hit on today, at least to start, and I mean, there's just so much now that I haven't gotten to, so we're probably going to be spinning on this boat for a while, is we'd been talking about the Thursday and part of Friday show about the shipped out anthrax that wasn't dead, and we didn't think it was alive, but oops, we found out that, gee, maybe our whole method for killing these virulent pathogens has been wrong all along. Oh no. Yes. Now, before we even get there, though, I want to back up just a little bit to the last live show last night, which was Nathan Frazier's I can't remember the name of the show. Nathan Frazier with the little crown. Oh, you know the one I'm talking about. Somebody give it to me. Quick, cue me dial. Live Free FM. That's what it is. All right. It's Monday morning and it's early, so you must excuse me. And I'm on syrup mode because now my body thinks it's October. Anyway. A Nathan Frazier show last night at 11, Live Free FM. He had talked about something that he apparently hadn't thought about a lot because he didn't think it ever affected him, and that was technocracy. Now, I listened very intently to Nathan's show because I really, really appreciate his take on things. I've known Nathan through radio for a very long time. I mean, we started together back on two networks ago. And I've listened to almost every single show of his. There have been a few that I had to miss because of personal issues, but I always caught him on the back side listening to the archives. But what I found was interesting is that somebody like Nathan, who has spent his time talking about liberty and freedom and that type of thing, that he really started to take notice to this insane mad science gone mad. Because I'll tell you, a lot of people are like that, where they never really saw science as being an evil. I have so many friends like that who say, hey, you know, if it weren't for places like DARPA sprinkling money around and all these research institutions, we wouldn't have all the medical advances and technological advances that we have today. The internet, you know, and that's always That's always the take on that. But when you really start digging in deep, like we've been doing on the show, and looking at how complicated this stuff is that agencies like DARPA are tackling, and then how they're rolling it out to the dumb American public, of course, in the way that it's going to be your savior. But on the backside, every single project is about manipulation and control. The overlords with the eye to be watching you at all times, to be integrating biology with technology. I mean, that's pretty much what it's turned into. You see that the technocracy has turned into a very, very scary place. And I hear Nathan saying that there's a large contingent of people out there that are just ready to accept all this. And yeah, we looked at a study a while back, and I think it has a lot to do with this dangling carrot dopamine addiction that we've talked about quite a number of times with technological gadgets. It, you know, I can see it in my kid. When I give my kid screen time on a computer, that computer turns into crack. That kid, you know, I could tell her, all right, you could play for an hour. And I don't let her play games, but then as soon as she gets on the computer, she's playing in Photoshop or she's playing in PowerPoint or she's doing, you know, she's pretty good at her Google searches, looking for animal pictures for this, that, and the other thing. But the second I walk away, I come back and she's found some online game that she's jonesing over. You know, I don't know, My Little Pony, Pony Wars or something like that. You know what I mean? And I'm like, come on, we're not going there. 5 minutes. And it turns into a massive fight, an argument. The kid won't listen. Everything she could possibly do for the rest of that day is sneaking back up into that room every second that I'm not looking, or, oh, I have to go to my room to get a book, and then she disappears. And I've known addicts in my life, and I have to tell you that dangling carrot dopamine addiction is no joke. And so as they've gotten the large majority of our population addicted to gadgets and addicted to the newest, the biggest, the consumeristic buy things you don't need society, and then use the, in particular, the mobile device to be the thing that allows you to transact with society. We got all these find me apps, you know, where it'll search around using Bluetooth and find people in your area that maybe have something in common with you by scanning their cell phones. You have dating services. We are going to be able to pay. I mean, how many now online pay services can you do with QR codes on your phone? And before you know it, it's also going to be doing some sort of identity authentication and that type of thing. I mean, I was just reading about these new iris scanners. We had touched on them a while ago. Actually, there was a story here about the new, we've been talking about biometrics on and off. And I don't know, I really hit hard on this anthrax stuff in my feed, so I might have to go back and find that one. But there was a brand new phone app that they were working on that, you know, of course, biometrics is being sold to the public, again, the dumb public, that, hey, it's such a great thing because guess what? You don't have to remember your passwords anymore, and we know that your puny little brains find that difficult. So don't you worry. You hold your phone up to your eye, and it goes chick, chick, and we take a picture of your iris and identify you, and every time you do it, we get better. But don't forget, we still are sharing your information, even if you don't know it, from your phone to the national intelligence agencies. And oh, by the way, I saw that last night, and we can go out here and double check that they voted. They never completed the vote when they came back from vacation for the extension of those clauses of the Patriot Act. Hold on, let's go to the story because this was kind of important. But there's some new act that they're working on now that they're going to be arguing this morning. And I don't really know any details of it, but it sure sounds to me like even if we thought we had gained something in regards to nipping surveillance in the bud, we probably didn't, because A, the feds came out at one point a couple days back and said, well, we don't care if you say we can't spy, because we're going to do it anyway. And guess what? We're not going to delete any of the records we already have. And number two, how are you going to know? You know, I mean, and who's going to stop them? So anyway, this is this came out last night late. It was breaking news. Controversial provisions of the Patriot Act authorizing government surveillance programs have expired after the Senate failed to vote for an extension. This was last night. Now, remember, they came back from vacation. Like, what a bunch of douchebags, too. They left for a fucking week for Memorial Day while all this was on the table. And, hey, if they would have stayed there and argued it, who's to say that, you know, something wouldn't have slipped through the back door and they would have passed it had they had an extra 4 or 5 days to do it. But on the other hand, who in this country got 5 days off for freaking Memorial Day? I know I didn't. Did you? Did anybody else? No, I don't think so. So why are we paying these assholes for 5 day break for Memorial Day? That just really annoyed me, but it seemed to work in our favor somewhat, like I said, until we find out what this other U.S. Freedom Act is that's going on the docket today to be discussed. But anyway, let's finish this. So it says controversial provisions of the Patriot Act authorizing government surveillance programs have expired after the Senate failed to vote for an extension. And that was late Sunday when they came back. And like, who was, you know, the great part was who's going to be like on the ball Sunday night after a long vacation having to come back and debate this. But on the other hand, like, thank God it wasn't something that, I don't know, that affected like the next 30 generations like this did. And they put a lot of time and effort into it. Like, what a bunch of half-assed buffoons. It just really bothers me that something as important as this. And like I said, this worked to our benefit that there was no time and they didn't want to be there, but thank God it wasn't something that we wanted them to vote up. You know, didn't that happen once with the, one of the unemployment benefit bills or something at the end of the year where they were all playing chicken and they never passed it. And then these people sat for like a month and a half while they were on vacation till these clowns came back and decided to vote again. Anyway, the Senate will reconvene, and this is going to be today, Monday afternoon, to consider the USA Freedom Act on Monday. And it doesn't exactly explain. And honestly, I am just so busy. We had so much stuff going on this weekend personally. And then the network was just hip hopping. There was just so many shows and whatever. And I'm always like running at the edge, trying to get stuff cut so it goes on time and juggle my life for the weekend. So I didn't really get to read about the USA Freedom Act, but if someone wants to do a little homework, that's what we're voting on today. It says lawmakers have debated the possibility of extending the authority of Section 215 of the Patriot Act that authorizes bulk data collection. And the thing is that a Supreme Court had ruled that that bulk data collection was unconstitutional. But that's what I was saying when the NSA came out then and they said, we don't give a shit. And I knew they would. They were debating bulk data collection and other provisions in the extraordinary Sunday afternoon session. The debate started at 4 p.m. local, 8 hours before the expiration deadline, which was at midnight. The National Security Agency used Section 215 of the Patriot Act as the basis for collecting phone records of Americans who were not necessarily under official investigation. It also was used to track financial data and to obtain companies' internet business records. The extent of the mass surveillance program was revealed nearly 2 years ago by Edward Snowden. Two other sections that were not extended included the quote-unquote lone wolf provision that targeted surveillance of people suspected to be terrorists but not part of any group. Oh, so those pesky lone wolves that they've been warning and warning and warning about that are going to be the jihad of us all. And the roving wiretap provision was also not extended, allowing the monitoring of a specific person irrespective of devices used. Wow, I almost think that I must have been on both of those lists, considering all the shit that I put up with here from every direction. My, you know, I've mentioned this before, but I've had this freaky thing going on recently It hasn't happened in a few days, but, you know, I'll be in one application having a conversation, sharing things on one app, and all of a sudden my keyboard stops working, and I'm in the middle of a conversation, so I go to my phone and I go to the mobile app, and my keyboard on my phone stops working too. That's never happened before just recently, and that's happened twice in a row. So just interesting to me, and it's almost like, you know, I don't know. They have little blow-up bombs on every single device we use now. All you have to do is type in the right keywords. And that did happen again this weekend. All right, so anyway, letting the provisions, quote-unquote, sunset is regarded as a victory by those who were against government surveillance programs and, yes, the technocracy. Supporters of the Patriot Act, however, say that the programs were of vital importance to U.S. national security. And of course they were, because we've just caught so many damn terrorists wanting to jihad you and your kids as they're running across the Mexican border. But wait, running across the Mexican border? Well, yes, hold on, because we have a new way to track jihadis. Wait, what page am I on? Sorry, it's Monday, guys. Now we have a new way to track jihadis, and if I can find it, we will play it. Here we go. Let me join the call, and will Skype work? There we go. All right, a new way to track jihadis coming in through the airports. This one's starting at Dulles in Washington, D.C. Oh, nothing is listening. All right, well, I guess I said jihadi one too many times. Damn it. Here it comes. Jeez Louise. Didn't they bust someone for blowing up their computer? Because it's going to be me next. Oh, come on. This just kills the whole flow of the show. Damn it. All right. If I have to, I'm going to threaten you, YouTube. I'm going to go to another machine if I have to. All right, hold on one second. I guess I'm going to have to because it's just spinning, spinning, spinning. let me think of where I am. Yeah, I'm not going anywhere. So hold the phone. We are going to disconnect this Skype. We're going to stop that YouTube. I am going to reconnect to the other machines. I mean, I literally have to have a backup machine just to do a show. Oh, and the Skype has been offline for a while, so I have 2,272 messages. All right, hold on. Let's connect again. And this is the non-echoing machine. Hopefully. Oh. This one has speakers. Okay. So, now that I completely lost my train of thought, let's see how they're going to track the jihadis at the border with new technology. Hold on. Again, talk about like false starts.
Speakers.
Okay. So, now that I completely lost my train of thought.
Fuck. Yeah, hold on. Gotta kill all the chats.
Damn it. Oh, you know, we weren't going to get away with a flawless Monday morning. Of course not, because we all hate Mondays. All right, now we should be okay. No more echoes, no more feedback. All right. Facial recognition is a new tool to tighten border security so you can't get in or out.
The Department of Homeland Security has a new tool for tightening border security. It's something called facial recognition technology, and it's getting a three-month tryout at a major airport. Here's Chris Van Cleve.
Here at Dulles Airport outside Washington, D.C., U.S. Customs officers are doing real-world testing of advanced facial recognition technology aimed at catching people trying to enter the country using someone else's passport.
How long does the process take from taking the picture to checking it?
So it takes about 5 to 7 seconds.
Customs and Border Protection Deputy Assistant Commissioner John Wagner.
It has an algorithm that will give them a confidence factor, and the officer can use that to make their decision whether or not they feel it's the true bearer of the passport.
Next, please.
Now, did you hear that? An algorithm. It's all about the algorithm. I actually heard Nathan mention the algorithm, too. If you notice, that is the new buzzword. And, I mean, anyone who's done any type of databasing or programming in the past knows all about the algorithm. The algorithm is the machine making the decisions. But he said exactly that. I think that'll become our new mantra. It's all about the algorithm. It's the way that now these people can detach themselves from any life or death moral decisions that need to be made in the future. I want to play a video. I've talked about autonomous drones in the past, and we have this fear now with Amazon chomping at the bit, wanting the FAA to give out all these licenses. And I know people still think drones are a joke, and when they see those little hobby drones, they try and make them out like, oh, look how cute they are. Oh, look how fun they are. But I've told you guys about my nightmare from 30 years ago that I used to have over and over and over and over and over and over again. And I used to think they were little triangular UFOs shooting at us as we're all screaming, and they're coming at us in swarms. And one day I realized, holy shit, I know what those were, because we didn't have a reference back in those days, but we do now. They were drones. This commercial came out, I saw it twice this weekend, from Audi, and I want to play it for you because this is our future, people. Our future is this technocracy. And I know, you know, people talk about stopping it. There is no stopping the foot of technology moving forward. We have people like Kurzweil in the driving seat, but I mean, we can't stop innovation. There's no way to stop innovation. And I don't know if I really want to stop innovation, but the problem is that the way this is being used is to clamp down on every biological cell and organism on this planet and bag and tag you from upside down to sideways, where there will be no escape, there will be no freedom, there will be nothing. And Nathan was talking about this whole Zeitgeist movement. That's what he was talking about. And I've seen all three of those movies. And yes, that Joe, I don't even remember what the hell that guy's name is. And in the first movie, I thought he was pretty good. But after I started watching the other two movies, I was like, wow, this really is going somewhere where I don't want to go. I want my freedom, and I do not want probes in every cell being able to monitor me. So anyway, let's get back to this facial recognition for border security, and it's all about the algorithm.
Okay. John Wagner.
It has an algorithm that will give them a confidence factor, and the officer can use that to make their decision whether or not they feel it's the true bearer of the passport.
Next, please.
On average, more than 19,000 people clear customs at Dulles daily. At least a few times a year here, someone isn't who they claim. CBP admits it's a vulnerability. The technology compares the photo embedded in a passport with one taken on the spot.
How'd I do?
One.
I'm a 1% match.
But privacy advocates worry the technology could be used to track law-abiding citizens.
The government has a very mixed record when it comes to privacy safeguards.
Harley Geiger is senior counsel at the Center for Democracy and Technology.
The real concern is not so much this particular pilot program. It is that this particular pilot program is a step towards a larger program, not just in ports of entry, but also in public places, mass transit systems in throughout the domestic United States.
The three-month pilot project at Dulles is part of a larger test of biometric technology. This fall, Customs will begin collecting face and iris scans from people entering and leaving Mexico on foot from a San Diego area border crossing.
On foot, no less. I mean, we talked about like the Canadian border before, and I was like, well, thank God you can still walk across the bridge, but I guess not. And, you know, I had read something quite a while back that Denver International Airport was already using the facial recognition technology, as well as some of the other technologies. And I don't know if we read that story, but I referenced it, and I found it a couple weeks back about using that laser. And maybe while this is playing, actually, I have another clip after this, so maybe while those are playing, I'll find that story again, because I want to read about that. They can use this laser that can scan you from many, many, many yards away, and it can literally tell you even what you ate for breakfast by being able to scan what's on your lips. All right, let's go back to this. What computer am I on? All right, here we go.
We do our database checks and we do our watch list checks. We want to make sure we're checking the right person.
Yes, we do our database checks and our watch list checks. It makes me wonder, like the last time I was in an airport and I got the up close and personal three times in a private room by Maude and her best friend.
The right identity through those systems.
The pictures will not be shared and are only being stored while the agency reviews the now complete field testing.
Oh, wait a minute. Didn't we hear that with the naked body scanners? The pictures will not be shared or stored. And then we find out that they were swapping them like garbage pail kid cards.
Program was deemed a success. Those cameras could be added to airports nationwide.
Oh.
Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Dulles Airport, Virginia. Yes.
I'm so damn excited about that one. All right, so that was with facial recognition, and they're going to be scanning irises. But hey, guess what? They're going to be able to scan your iris, and nobody's going to care because it's going to be a natural, normal thing. Hold on. Am I connected? Yes, it's going to be a natural, normal thing because of the smartphone.
A phone that's so smart, it unlocks by recognizing your iris when you look at the screen. That's the latest feature of the Fujitsu Arrows NX FO4G, which goes on sale later this month. The Iris Passport system takes about a second to unlock and learns the features of the owner's eyes, making the recognition more accurate with each use. Japan's largest mobile carrier, NTT Docomo, will begin selling the phone later this month. Team member Kohai Oku says the new feature also enhances cellular security, making mobile payments more secure.
Well, so there you go. No?
If I were to describe it in one phrase, it's that there won't be small inconveniences. Until now, you've had to manually input IDs and passwords. But if you use iris recognition, you can input those automatically just by looking at the screen.
Yes.
And I think that's a merit.
Yes.
The phone has infrared lights so that even in a dark area, it's able to recognize the user's iris quickly. Sounds good, but it's not for everyone. Iris Passport doesn't work with colored contact lenses.
Ding, 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 ding. When I first heard that, I was like, oh, we better all run out and get a set of colored contact lenses because that apparently is a chink in the armor. Yeah, so it apparently doesn't work with colored contact lenses, but don't worry about that because most people will be too dumb to realize that they're being sucked into the matrix and they will use their easy-to-access brand new cell phone that they didn't need that allows them not to have to remember those pesky passwords. And this iris scanning technology, there was another story that came out in April. Check this out.
You've seen eye scanners in movies like Charlie's Angels, but even in real life, in order for eye scanners to work, they have to get up close and personal. New technology is beginning to mimic another movie, Minority Report, where long-range devices are able to scan entire crowds from a distance, which has critics worried. Every person's iris, that colored circle around the pupil of the eye, is different. That's why police have started using them to build ID databases, like the FBI has done with fingerprints. Carnegie Mellon University's College of Engineering is testing a new system that it says can accurately read each iris's unique signature from as far away as 12 meters. Professor...
Now, 12 meters, 12 times 3 is 36. That's 36 feet. They can literally read your iris and identify who you are. There was another video, oh, probably a month or so before this one, and I don't know where that one is, but this one I had on hand, where they were showing police cars pulling somebody over, and while the cop was sitting in his car, he was shining this iris reader into your side view mirror, and he was able to bounce through the mirror back to your eye and do an identification while he was still sitting in his car behind you.
Mario Savitas says it could offer a safer way to ID dangerous criminals during police stops.
That's our long-range iris system at the back, and what it's doing is, as I'm looking at the mirror right now, it's actually finding my face, detecting my eyes, extracting features, and then matching them, running through the database to come up with the identity of who I am. Well, it can really save the officer's life by making sure that, you know, he's far away and safe.
The American Civil Liberties Union fears police may use long-range iris scanners to track people in large public crowds. They say using scanners in that way might violate privacy rights.
So how frightening...
Movies like Charlie...
How the hell frightening is that? To be able to track you from 35 feet away and they can scan you in large groups and identify you everywhere you go. Get color contact lenses and sunglasses. Holy shit, people. So here's a story. This was by Madison Rupert and Ally back from 2012. And this was something that I thought they were already using in the Dallas, in the Denver International Airport. It says new laser-based molecular scanner will tell the government everything about you from 164 feet away. As ludicrously far-fetched as this headline sounds, there is a new laser-based scanner built by Genia Phonetics, who is currently in a strategic partnership and technology development agreement with InQtel, which can detect traces of just about anything on your person from a stunning 50 meters or 164 feet away. And somewhere around one, and who the hell knows what this is, I don't even know, this is trillion, quadrillionth of a second. It's one and how many zeros? 3, 6, 9, 12, 15 zeros, maybe? I don't know. It's really tiny, and I don't have my bifocals on, but it looks like it's about 15 zeros. One and 115 zeros of a second. Damn fast. One must realize that as disturbing as this may sound, it is not really all that shocking when you consider the DHS's future attribute screening technology or the rise and continuing growth of the nearly ubiquitous use of facial recognition technology. Genia Photonics refers to the ability of these types of picosecond synchronized programmable lasers to be used for, quote, standoff threat detection, unquote. Essentially, this is just a different way of saying that the government will soon be able to scan your body, your car, or your belongings for just about any molecule or any substance they please without you knowing, all at unimaginable speeds. That means that as soon as 2013, and remember this was written in 2012, we could see this equipment somewhere around 1 million times more sensitive than what is available now, can also scan 10 million times faster than any currently available system due to its portable nature, and it can be used in airports to scan every single person. According to Genia Photonics, this laser scanner technology can, quote, penetrate clothing and many other organic materials and offers a spectroscopic information, especially for materials that impact safety, such as explosives and pharmacological substances. One can only assume that this means that the laser scanning system can not only be remotely inspecting passengers for explosives, but also for drugs and any other banned goods. The claims made by the company, which holds over 30 patents in this technology, are, to say the least, quite extraordinary. They are, quote, claiming incredible biomedical, of course, and industrial applications from identifying individual cancer cells in a real-time scan of a patient to detecting trace amounts of harmful chemicals in sensitive manufacturing processes, according to Gizmodo. So there you go. This is probably some of this new cancer detection technology as well. You wait and see, because it's always, always, always used for the good of many versus for the freedom of the few. This is not going to be for our benefit. This is lockdown technocracy at its best. It says, our partnership with Genia Photonics will build the company's success on the commercial market. Genia Photonics fiber-based technology will lead to a unique possibility for our customers in the U.S. intelligence community. In QTEL also states that an important benefit of Genia Photonics implementation as compared to existing solutions is that the entire synchronized laser system is comprised in a single, robust, and alignment-free unit that may be easily transported for use in many environments. And this compact and robust laser has the ability to rapidly sweep wavelengths in any pattern and any sequence. This means that the DHS or any of their child agencies like the TSA could roll out these to many places that they now operate, like major sporting events, train stations, highways, and more. And if we could take the past as any indicator, we can trust that they will most certainly end up using this technology as much as possible if it works as it is claimed. Now, it's interesting, too. We just see that the FBI is partnering with the Seattle Police Department. I don't know if you saw that. I think they're moving 10 agents into their police department. And the NYPD is now going to be aiding the FBI in looking for, how did they word it? Oh, what did they say they were going to be searching for? I know it's ISIS, but the way they worded it was really curious. I'll have to find it. But the NYPD, like we've said along for a long time, Microsoft set up their cyber patrol center in New York City before they set up the one in Seattle. So it's interesting that those are the two places that are now going to be tying in with global police, global surveillance communities worldwide. And I think because of that, we may need to pop over here to Billy Illy Gates. Actually, you know what? Before we even get there, let's use this to segue now to the rest of the story. And I did not look this past 24 hours or so, but this is where this anthrax story ended up after it spun up on Thursday. I think originally they had said that there were 9 labs in the United States and 1 in South Korea that had received live anthrax shipments out of the DOD, the Department of Defense. We also established that less than a year ago, the CDC had done pretty much the same thing, sent live samples, thought they were dead. And then they had a senatorial congressional hearing where they're like, oh, we don't know how this happens. We're going to crack down on our processes and make sure that, you know, we are secure. It totally made us not believe that there was any security much at all, that this, you know, smallpox sitting out open for 40 years without any type of security. It made you really wonder as to who was watching the storehouse of all of these bioterror agents. Well, we find out then on Friday, just before I aired the pre-recorded interview I had done with April Bowden, that it comes out that they'd been irradiating these anthrax samples before they sent them out to kill them, or so they thought. And now it's been discovered that all this time that they thought gamma or X-rays would kill the live anthrax virus, it doesn't kill it all the way. And the small little bit that's left could incapacitate hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, depending on the size of the sample. Well, here's the update to that now. So this was as of Saturday. The Pentagon now admits that there were 24 labs and 2 foreign countries. So not 9 labs and 1 foreign country. Now it's 24 labs and 2 foreign countries that received live anthrax shipments. Now, if this isn't a setup, I don't know what the hell is. I mean, when I started seeing this, I'm like, beep, 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 beep. After everything that we've been following here with pathogens and never before seen, and look at how it's mutating, and oh my God, it's climate change, and we're all going to die unless we get vaccines. But oh, don't worry, because DARPA and all these mad science gone mad agencies are working on all these newfangled synthetic vaccinations that'll cure you, so we'll keep you safe. I mean, what a story they are weaving. So check this out. The Pentagon has revised the number of instances in which live anthrax samples have, quote unquote, accidentally been shipped both across the U.S. and abroad, and has announced a comprehensive review. Oh, of course. And I feel so damn safe into the poor handling of the deadly bacteria. quote, as of now, 24 laboratories in 11 states and two foreign countries are believed to have received suspect samples, said the Pentagon in a statement. Earlier this week, it was revealed that the U.S. Army's Dugway Proving Ground in Utah had shipped live anthrax to labs in 9 states and to a U.S. military base in South Korea. With the new discoveries, the Pentagon is urging all those who receive such shipments to stop working with those samples until further notice from the U.S. authorities. The shipments of supposedly deactivated anthrax specimens reportedly began on March of 2014 and continued through April of 2015. So wow, we have a whole year, over a whole year of live samples that could be used for bioterror floating around the freaking planet unchecked. How special is that? These samples were mistakenly marked as inactive, and we already know that more labs and more, let's read this again. We already know that more labs and more lots of inactivation failures, this is a quote, with anthrax spores are being identified, says Daniel Sosin, deputy director of the CDC's Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response, in an email to state officials. The USA Today paper quotes, so there's lots more. So I guess there's lots more coming. We have concern that the inactivation procedures, when followed properly, are inadequate to kill all spores, and that the U.S. government is developing an approach to securing all possible samples for misuse. So very interesting, because the question is, how long have they been deactivating them using radiation that they've been shipping? I mean, they're saying it's from the last 13 months. But I could guarantee you they're going to find out that, oh, it's maybe been the last 13 years since 2001. Wink, wink. I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't have any proof of that. But, you know, put on a seatbelt, because I think it's going to end up being much worse. We're going to find out there are pathogens all over now that have fallen into the hands of jihadis. At the same time, the Pentagon announced a quote-unquote comprehensive review of the lab procedures, processes, and protocols associated with, quote, inactivating spore-forming anthrax, unquote. The probe by the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, like they're any fucking authority, since they were the ones that did the same exact shit last summer, will be led by Under Secretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics, Frank Kendall. After the CDC investigation is complete, the department will conduct its own investigation with respect to any lapses in performance and assure appropriate accountability, the DOD said. Like, again, who is making the CDC the authority, since they've had more blunders than anyone in the last 12 months? They hope you don't remember that. The technicians dealing with anthrax not only failed to, quote unquote, inactivate a sample, but it was also followed by a, quote, failure to confirm inactivation before shipping the sample, unquote, which was then followed by a, quote, failure to confirm inactivation upon receiving the sample, quote, unquote, says Richard Embright, professor of chemical biology at Rutgers University. The professor claims that such cases occur regularly, referring to similar shipments of live anthrax bacteria in 2006 and 2014. Yes, that was the 2014 was the CDC one. 2006, I think that was the letters that were mailed to the journalists and to senators, I believe. The scientific community has welcomed the review of procedures, which would hopefully allow avoiding such chains of failure in the future. So, I mean, make sure, man, you feel safe being watched in every way, shape, or form. Because it seems to me like nobody is watching the hen house. I mean, we just heard Libby Halevy's nuclear hot seat interview with Sister Megan Rice and the other two activists who just waltzed right in to Tennessee's Y-12, supposedly the most secure nuclear research facility in the United States. And these three people walked in without anybody stopping them. Yes, I feel so fucking safe. You know, it's all about a money-making scheme for all these assholes in the Department of Homeland Security and all their cronies that are putting out federal contracts to do the lockdown. And now they all have a database, so all those fat fuckers can sit in their surveillance rooms with all their dashboards and be able to monitor every single one of us, every movement, every breath you take, every ounce of food you eat will be able to be monitored and watched on a dashboard 24/7. That's what it's all about. All right, so that's the update on the anthrax. I don't know if it's gotten any further than that since Saturday. I will have to look at that once the show is over. But here's something that I wanted to hit, and it seems so interesting to me that this came out just as Ebola ramped down, measles ramped up. Then we found out that Bill Gates invested in some big vaccine technology company, and now we have this anthrax, and oh shit, it's going to get much bigger. Well, the Huffington Post posted a story that was an interview with Mr. Bill Gates. And the question was asked, Billy, what is the biggest, most predictable disaster that you see in the history of the human race that you are working to eliminate? Well, I bet you if there was a Cupid doll at stake, you'd be able to figure it out. So let's listen to Mr. Billy Gates. Make your hair stand on end. Hopefully there's no commercial, but hold on. Hurry up, it's connecting. I might have to sing. Hold on. It's coming, come on. I might have to go to YouTube Direct, hold on. Bink.
It's the Memorial Day sales event at every West.
There we go. Boop, 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 boop. Okay, let's skip it.
Describe for me as vividly as you can what it is you're worried about, what it is that nightmare scenario looks like.
Unfortunately, there's very few things, and most of them are very low probability. Some big volcanic explosion, gigantic earthquake, asteroid. But at least in the nuclear case, you've got to say we take it quite seriously. We budget a lot of money, have a lot of people who think about nuclear deterrence, and I'm very glad that work's being done. And I rate the chance of a nuclear war in my lifetime as being fairly low. I rate the chance of a widespread epidemic far worse than Ebola in my lifetime as well, over 50%.
Bing, 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 bing. I rate an epidemic, and love the way he positions this, far worse than Ebola at greater than 50%. I mean, asking Bill Gates what keeps you up at night and what do you think is going to be the end of the human race is just such a loaded question. All right, so Billy Gates calls it out, man. We're all going to die. 50% chance we are going to have a mass fucking epidemic in his lifetime.
If we look at the 20th century and we look at the death chart of the 20th century, I think everybody would say, oh yeah, there must be a spike for World War I. You know, sure enough, there it is, like 25 million. And there must be a big spike for World War II, and there it is, it's like 65 million. But then you'll see this other spike that is as large as World War II right after World War I. And most people, a lot of people would say, well, what? What was that? There's two kinds of flus. There's flus that spread between humans very effectively, and there's flus that kill lots of people. And those two properties have only been combined into a widespread flu once in history. Well, that is Spanish flu. We have no idea where it came from.
Ding, 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 ding. Now, that's something else, and I put that on my list to investigate. But he's looking at these death charts, and he's like, okay, if we look at the death charts, we see there's one spike, and that's World War I, and then we see there's another spike, and that's World War II. But then there's this spike that comes after World War I, and that's the Spanish flu. And oh, lo and behold, there's only one time that being able to spread and becoming a pandemic has kind of meshed together, and we have no idea where it came from. Now, if I were a betting person, I would almost bet that somewhere in the bowels of World War I, we probably had the beginnings of some sort of biowarfare program. It's only a guess. But how interesting, we have, quote, no idea where it came from. It killed millions of people globally. It spread like a pandemic. And it was right after the war. Yes, very, very interesting. All right, let's continue.
It's called the Spanish flu because the Spanish press was the freest. They were the first to talk openly about it. And so in the annals of epidemic history, that's the big event. I funded a disease modeling group that uses computer simulation, and that work has been phenomenal in helping us target our polio eradication resources and, you know, which parts of Nigeria should we work harder on.
His computer simulated disease group that he funded to find out which diseases are going to kill the most people in which geological location.
And it's very natural if you have a group like that to say, hey, look at something like a Spanish flu in the modern day.
Yes, and let's make sure we ship that to labs all over the world so they can make it even more dangerous than it was before, and then publish the results. They did that.
Health systems are far better. And so you think, hey, that wouldn't be very bad. Well, we tried it, and there are some assumptions we had to make. But what we showed is that the force of infection because of modern transport, which compared to 1918 is over 50 times as great. And so if you get something like a flu and you look at that map of how within days, it's basically in all urban centers of the entire globe, that is very eye-opening.
Well, that's what I want to know is, like, in 1918, it's not like we had aircraft flying all over the planet to be able to take Typhoid Mary from point A to point B in any easy way. So how the hell did this flu spread globally in such a short period of time, just came out of the blue? You know, we don't know where it came from, and it spread everywhere. I 100% have to say that there was some backdoor lab mixing that happened here, and this was an experiment that went whoops wrong.
Happened with Spanish flu in the past. The opportunity to do more than just let it run its course is really only in the last decade. Basically, when you talk about drugs, you can talk about small molecules or talk about these complex biological protein-like things, of which there's a subclass called antibodies. Antibodies are the molecules that the immune system naturally builds to attack disease. Today, the idea that somebody says, oh, here's an antibody, make a lot of it, make it very quickly, that's right on the cutting edge. And the Ebola epidemic showed me that we're not ready for a serious epidemic.
And that's all it was. The Ebola epidemic, I really think, was a test to see how it would spread. Oh, let's make sure we get our pathogen out there and let's see how many people we can infect, because, hey, we got all these experimental RNAi based and other crazy technology based vaccines that all these rich fuckers are investing in.
That would be more infectious and would spread faster than Ebola did. This is the greatest risk of a huge tragedy. This is the most likely thing by far to kill over 10 million excess people in a year. We don't need.
Wow! 10 million people in a year is what his predictions are. Far likely.
We need to invest nearly what we do in military preparedness. This is something where less than $1 billion a year on R&D, medical surveillance, standby personnel, cross-training the military so they can play a role in terms of all the logistics here. This can be...
Did you hear that? For an epidemic, this is exactly what we've been calling out. Surveillance, calling out the military. Did you just hear him say that? This is exactly what we saw in the case of Ebola. Hold on. I want to back this up just 30 seconds so we can hear him say that again.
People in a year, we don't need to invest nearly what we do in military preparedness. This is something where less than $1 billion a year on R&D, medical surveillance, standby personnel, cross-training the military so they can play a role in terms of all the logistics here. This can be done.
And cross-training the military. That's awesome.
We may not get many more warnings like this one to say, okay, it's a pretty modest investment to avoid something that really, in terms of the human condition, would be a gigantic setback.
Yes, I'm sure it would be a gigantic setback for you, Mr. Bill Gates, if 10 million people died in a year worldwide. Oh, my God. And there's actually an extended interview that goes along with that, but I don't think my blood pressure can deal with it, so we might have to deal with it tomorrow. But you know what? After the show, I'll drop that one into chat. I'm on the other machine now, so I'm not in there right now. But I'll put these all into the notes of the show once it goes up to YouTube. All right, a couple last things that I want to touch on are drones. Let's look at the drones, because the drones are coming. Just before I went on air, I saw Pigmine posted a story last night. Yes, Enrique Iglesias got freaking chopped by a drone while on stage. It serves you right for using this technology. He uses it to further his narcissistic tendencies while he's on stage. Here, we're going to listen to this one.
Welcome back. Tonight, pop star Enrique Iglesias is recovering after being cut by a drone during one of his sold-out concerts.
Aww.
The show went on, but this latest incident, another reminder of these popular flying gadgets getting too close for comfort.
Aww.
Here's ABC's Kana Whitworth.
A frightening scene on stage Saturday as singer Enrique Iglesias performs. Watch as he reaches for the drone. Seconds later, he tosses it, getting cut by the blades. Iglesias' rep says the drone was used during the show to get shots at the crowd, and that he sometimes grabs it to give the audience a point-of-view shot. But this time, something went wrong. Iglesias is said to be semi-treated on stage and continued with the concert. A statement from his camp said that an ambulance met him at the airport after the concert and he was flown to Los Angeles.
His fingers were hacked, man. In this picture, he's got blood and like tape all wrapped around his bloody fingers. And then he took it. He had a white T-shirt on and he drew a big bloody heart on his T-shirt after having his hands hacked by the drone blades. You know, we've talked about that many times in regards to Saudi Arabia and their Habibs and the drones flying around. Drones are not a good idea, people. All right, very last is this new Audi commercial that I saw over the weekend, and I don't know if it's going to make any sense if you can't see it, but again, I'll drop it after the show. But let's check this out, because now drones are in mainstream media. They're all swarming outside of a building, and people are trapped inside.
I think we can make it, right?
It's okay, Jim. Just stay calm and move as quietly as possible. Everyone understand?
They open the doors, they walk out, and the drones are watching
movements.
Them. You're being attacked! Everyone's running for the cars!
Search Bodega Beach House.
Guy gets into his Audi. And he's got detect and kill drones in his Audi. All right, guys, make sure everyone sticks around. It is Monday. Tonight we have a new show for Mr. Brandon Turbeville. And Nick Burnaby is live tonight at 11 p.m. Eastern with the Anti-Media Radio. Up next, Mr. Hal Anthony.